everyone, and thanks for tuning in to Beats Research Radio, a podcast and YouTube channel that aims to disseminate science and research to the community. My name is Nicole Chu, an undergraduate student at the University of Ottawa, and I'll be your host on today's episode. Joining us is Dr. James Feng, Chief of Cardiovascular Medicine at the University of Utah School of Medicine. Dr. Feng received his medical degree from Duke University School of Medicine. He completed his internal medicine residency and chief residency at the Johns Hopkins Hospital and completed both fellowships in both cardiovascular medicine and advanced heart failure and transplant cardiology at the Brigham and Women's Hospital. His research interests include coronary artery disease affecting a transplanted heart, heart failure characterized by preserved ejection fraction, sleep disturbances, and heart failure, as well as ventricle assist devices. Dr. Feng has won multiple awards for his teaching at both local and national levels and is regularly listed as one of the best doctors in America. We are so honored to have you on our channel, Dr. Feng.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Thank you so much for your time today. So to begin our conversation, for those who may not be too familiar on this topic, could you provide a brief overview of what heart failure is and how it develops?
Yeah, so heart failure is really a clinical syndrome in which some abnormality of the heart or its function leads to the signs and symptoms of the syndrome of heart failure. And generally, we like it to be confirmed with some diagnostic study. Some diagnostic study of the heart to show there's something abnormal with the heart. And then two, some evidence that there is what we call congestion, which is the condition in which there is salt and water overload of the human body. And this was all really agreed upon recently by something called the universal definition of heart failure, which really describes it along those axes. That is a clinical syndrome of signs and symptoms associated with an abnormality of the heart and being confirmed with evidence of congestion. Signs and symptoms, by the way, you might ask yourself, are unfortunately not very specific for the condition. So the common symptoms include shortness of breath, easy fatigability, exertional intolerance, and even chest discomfort. Some of the signs include swelling of the legs, swelling of the belly, in severe circumstances, lowering of the blood pressure, and in some circumstances, the ability to hear fluid in the lungs upon physical examination.
Oh, I see. Thank you so much for sharing us with this overview of heart failure. So in your seminars in the past on heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, you've mentioned that heart failure is more of a reno than it is cardio. Do you mind expanding on the relationship found in patients with heart failure?
Well, we currently categorize heart failure by, to be very simplistic, the strength of the heart muscle. And we quantified the strength of the heart muscle with something called the ejection fraction. It was really just a ratio of volumes. It's the ratio of the volume of the blood squeezed out of the heart by the total volume of the heart. And depending upon the strength of the heart muscle, the impact of the kidney on the performance of the heart and excreting salt and water can be quite variable. So for example, in heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, where the heart is extremely weak, the kidneys are really just reacting to the weak heart and hanging on to salt and water because of the weakness of the heart. In contrast, when the heart muscle is not weak, for example, heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, the role of the kidney is likely to be greater, because the signal to hang on to salt and water in a heart muscle that's not weak is a little harder to explain, suggesting that perhaps it's the kidney that is fundamentally the issue rather than the heart.
I see. Thank you for clarifying the kidney and heart relationship. So you also do a lot of research on ventricle assist devices. Can you provide some insights on any upcoming developments or new studies that you find particularly interested or are anticipating with excitement?
Yeah, so our center and a lot of this is really the work of my colleagues, specifically Stavros Strakos and Craig Seltzman, have looked at the use of ventricular assist devices, which are literally heart pumps that are connected to the heart to augment the output of the heart, can be also used to make to recover the heart. So one of the questions in a weak heart is how to make it stronger. And in addition to medications, one idea is to arguably rest the heart with a ventricular assist device. And if the heart is rested for long enough and with the right medications, the heart muscle can get stronger. And it can get so strong, so much stronger that it could facilitate removal of the pump and going along your life with your heart function restored. And we call this myocardial recovery. This is an evolving area. It's been used in clinical practice on a very selective basis, but the feasibility of this approach, I think, has been well demonstrated, and this is a big area of research to try to understand how can such a weak heart really return its function after putting in a heart pump to rest it. And I think this is one of the most interesting areas of ventricular assist device research, frankly, in the world right now.
Oh, that's really interesting hearing about these new and novel ventricular assist devices. So, in terms of these like novel studies, what are the biggest challenges currently like facing researchers in this area?
Well, I think this is true of all research, and that is funding. Obviously, these studies are challenging because they are quite expensive. And obviously, in the United States, we have the National Institutes of Health, which is a multi-billion dollar organization that helps to fund research. But of course, industry and foundations are another very important source of funding. The other clinical challenge that we have in doing these kind of studies is patient and provider involvement. My personal bias is that research should be more embraced by our providers and our patients because they're really not experiments so much as they are really trying to improve the human condition. And that both clinicians and patients and their families, you know, should be encouraged to participate in investigational studies because they not only can help the patient with their current illness, but more importantly, you know, improve the care of patients with this illness, including themselves. So I think that's a very important paradigm shift. I think they have that in cancer right now. So I think in the world of cancer, research studies are very much part of just clinical care. It's I like to say you're just getting the latest and greatest therapies, perhaps not completely tested, but that's the whole point. And I think the paradigm shift, at least in cardiovascular medicine, is that patients and providers need to understand that research studies are really just part of good clinical care.
I really like the point that you brought up about the importance of participating in these clinical studies in both like clinicians and for patients as well. So sort of shifting gears, as a very established researcher and cardiologist yourself, what advice would you offer for individuals interested in pursuing a career as a physician or an early career researcher?
Yeah, well, I think number one, make sure it's a passion. Research is incredibly rewarding, but it's also not without its challenges. And particularly to sustain a career over a long period of time, it really requires a passion for the issue. So make sure you've explored, make sure you've looked yourself in the mirror and that you, you know, this is a passion. If we assume it's a passion, then I think the very important, next very important thing is to surround yourself with not only like-minded people, but with people with a track record of doing this kind of thing. And modern research, particularly clinical research, but also basic research, really takes teams. Research or team of teams. And it's very important to work with well-functioning teams. And I think one of the most important things to explore if you're interested in research and you know what kind of topic you want to study is to make sure that you understand the people you're going to be working with, because that will ultimately determine your success.
Mm-hmm. I see. Thank you so much for sharing these pieces of advice and words of wisdom, Dr. Fang. It's very enlightening.
Happy to help.
And thank you so much for giving us a greater insight on the novel studies that you're looking forward to, as well as a greater insight on the relationship between the kidney and the heart.
Yes, I think it's, as a heart doctor, I think I've had to open up my world to the other organs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Fang, for joining us today in this interview and giving us a closer look at heart failure beyond its diagnosis.
I very much enjoyed it, and thank you for the invitation.
On behalf of our entire radio team and director, Dr. Amelia Alarcon, we thank all the Beats Radio listeners for your time, as well as Dr. Fang for your time joining us today. Don't forget to like and subscribe to our YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram channels at Beats Research. We hope to see you all next Wednesday. Thank you.
Bye-bye.